Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. Today, it is a fun day. It is the Science Forum Day. We've gathered a panel of science experts to respond to your questions and comments. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Always a good time here on the Science Forum. And if you're not careful, you may learn something as well. The way to contact us is A, the phone, B, email, voxpop@wamc.org. C, you could contact us on Facebook. We have a Facebook wall post on WAMC Radio's Facebook page. You could also go to the bottom of today's show page, wamc.org/voxpop. There's a place to comment there. You could tweet us at @WAMCVoxPop. But we love your calls. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. With that said, if we would, let's have the scientists sign in, please.
Ed Stander, SUNY Copleskill, Geology, Astronomy, Environmental Science, and anything Ivor can't answer.
Okay, I'm Ivor Gaver. I work for Applied Biophysics, and I'm going to help Ed.
We're here.
I'm Jim Pickett. I'm an organic chemist, recently retired from GE Global Research.
All right. Well,
everybody's retired but me?
Soon.
I hope.
You're looking longer in the tooth every day, so you never know. Soon you'll be emeritus and everything will be fine, right?
Right.
All right, so we already have a lot of calls in, so let's jump into it at 1-800-348-2551. We kick it off with our old buddy Merle in Argyle. Merle, you're on.
All right, thank you. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
This is a follow-up question from last month, probably. Had to do with leaves falling off trees. You don't have any plant people there, but maybe you guys can answer it anyway.
I bet they can.
We're all plants.
You can swing it, right?
Right.
The thing is, this had to do with leaves and a branch falling off, breaking off, and the leaves don't come off. Now, normally when the leaves fall, there's an open sore. The question I have is, does a tree cover the sore before the leaf falls off or after?
Huh.
Would you like to take it, Jim?
Jim, everyone's looking at Jim, so this one's on you, Jim.
Yeah, where's our biologist today?
All right, fake it.
Okay, I'll fake it. My guess is that it's pretty well sealed off because it seals off all the goodies to the leaf. The leaf dies and it falls off.
Right. It effectively the leaf drains first, and that's what turns it a color, and then it seals off that spot, and that's what makes it fall off. So, yeah, it's effectively dead before it falls.
Okay, so it's sealed, so there's not a bunch of open wounds on the tree when the leaf falls off.
Oh, no, not at all.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you. I just wanted a follow-up question. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. Poncho and Adams, you're on.
Hi. My question is this. If you have ice floating in water, with a little bit of the ice above water, of course, and the ice melts, will the level of the water go up?
The answer is no. The water will stay exactly the same.
I thought so.
It's an easy experiment to try. You put an ice cube in a glass and mark it before and after, and sure enough, there's a lot of space in ice, and when you effectively when it melts, you lose that space, and as a result, the part that's above the water level drops down, so it stays the same height.
Yeah. And if there are air bubbles in the ice, you might even lose a little volume.
That's true.
No, but
you won't, will you?
No,
because
it'll
be denser. That'll make it rise higher.
That's right. So it will not.
All right, Poncho.
Thank you very much.
You're satisfied then? Good. Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go over to Nancy in Stamford. Hello, Stamford, Vermont. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Hello.
My question is, radios.
Yes.
Like, I have your show on right now. When I walk towards the radio, it will come on louder. When I walk away, it will almost go down completely, volume-wise.
Oh, you mean... Okay, so this is a reception issue? Is that what we're talking about here?
Aha. Yeah.
So it isn't like when you walk away, it gets quieter because you're walking away.
No, it's a deceptive question, and maybe Ivor can tell us about this a little bit.
No, I can. All I can tell you, if you walk towards the radio, the frequency would change if you walk fast enough.
Is it an inductance thing with the antenna?
I would guess it's a grounding thing.
Yeah, the human antenna.
Right.
So you're acting as an antenna, Nancy.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Rent myself out then.
We see, there you go. And
yeah, you know, most antennas for radio stations need a really good ground to operate. In fact, usually they bury huge amounts of copper, at least two anyway, underneath the antenna to get a really good ground. And so when you get closer and closer to the radio, you're effectively becoming a better and better ground for the antenna.
I knew I was well grounded, and this proved it.
Well played. Thank you, Nancy.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. John in Glenville. John, you're on the Science Forum.
Hi, this is John. I had a question about the decomposition of dead and material that's on the bottom of lakes and streams and marshes. I do a lot of trapping, and I know it's H2S gas that's produced. It's very strong in some places. Last year I was up on Henderson Lake up by Tahawus. Mm-hmm. And it was really strong up there. My question is it, I know H2S gas can be poisonous, but is it just not strong enough to be poisonous to somebody that, say, paddling or stirring up the bottom?
Well, the human nose is exquisitely sensitive to hydrogen sulfide, so you can smell very, very small quantities. What would be a suffocating quantity to smell is probably well below the toxic level. Hydrogen sulfide is, in fact, very toxic. I think it's even more toxic than hydrogen cyanide. But no one could stand to be around enough to get a toxic dose.
Mm-hmm. And so how is it formed at the bottom of lakes?
Bacterial decomposition. There's sulfur-loving bacteria. There's also methane-producing bacteria. And these are all producing gases, which then come up to the surface.
Okay.
Yep.
John?
Okay. Yep. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
When you paddle towards the top. Don't get into the bottom. It's a lot easier.
Okay. Well, what if it's really shallow?
Then why would you be in the boat anyway?
Well, I suppose. You know, I was...
Why go fishing in a shallow lake?
Cleaning out my gutters for the first time in about 10 years.
Ah, so you had lots of gas.
And, well, was that gas in there? There were leaves, and there was a thick level of sediment, probably 3 inches thick in this gutter.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I should have done it quite a long time ago. So was there hydrogen sulfide in there?
Oh, I'm sure there was.
Yeah. Well, if there was, you would have known it.
You would have smelled it.
Okay. Well, I didn't smell it, although it was a messy job. Let's go to Pete in Albany. Pete, you're on.
Good afternoon, guys. I have a question regarding my girlfriend. I might be getting myself into trouble here.
Oh, boy.
But she drives using reading glasses. She says, takes off her prescription glasses, puts her readers on, and drives that way. She swears she can see the signs better that way. And it doesn't make any sense to me that a magnifying glass would...
Well, if you get really close to the signs, you can certainly read
well,
them better.
Well, yeah, like, you know, a foot or, you know, it doesn't make sense.
That's
make
not a good
any,
thing to do
Is there
in a
any
car.
Way that could work?
Okay, so anybody, an optician here or an optometrist?
Well, my wife has just had a cataract operation.
Yeah.
And she claimed that she used to have glasses for driving. But before she had the cataract operation, she said she could drive better with the glasses off. And I think that's a perception. I don't think it's really true.
So it's a matter of training your ability to analyze what
brain,
you see?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But I think it might be time for an eye test.
I agree. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks.
Bye.
1-800-348-2551.
Yeah, but drive her there. Don't let her drive. Mm.
That's scary. That's very scary. Mm. Let's go to Fred in Chatham. Fred, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Very often you'll read in a cooking recipe that if you you should cook a piece of meat to a certain temperature, and then remove it from the oven, and it will continue to, the temperature will continue to rise after you take it out. And that never made any sense to me. I was just wondering how that actually happens.
Okay.
I don't think so.
You don't think that's true?
No, I don't think so.
Well, the internal temperature could still go up because the outside, which has been closer to the air of the oven, is hotter than the internal temperature. So all things being equal, over time, the temperature will equalize through the okay, to so the piece of meat.
The outside of the meat is still cooking the inside of the meat.
That's right.
Well, yeah, because the outside is still hot.
Right. Heat always goes from hot to cold.
Yeah.
So if the inside, for example, if you take it to an extreme, mm-hmm. you've got a piece of meat that's freezing cold in the center and it's hot on the outside from the oven, the ice will melt on the inside slowly. And if you take it out, that heat will continue to go in there to melt it until the whole thing equalizes to the same temperature.
Fred, makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense to me. Thanks. I appreciate it a lot.
Oh, thank heavens.
Well, we are moving so quickly today. This is a very efficient panel today. I look forward to answering a record number of questions. That's if people call.
What is the record?
I don't know, 12? 13? It depends on if we get on clotheslines and, water with straws and some of those crazy ones.
Oh, yeah.
But if we have simple questions like this, bang, 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 let's try to break the record. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800. Why are you looking at me skeptically, Zach the engineer? 1-800-348-2551 is the number. You stay on board, young man. You stay on board with us.
Support comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Winslow Homer, The Nature and Rhythm of Life, through January 4, 2015. ArkellMuseum.org. Natural Logs, featuring nature photography by Scott Stoner and Denise Hackert Stoner, photo sales, note cards, slide presentations, and workshops. Bringing you the beauty of nature. NaturalLogs.com. And Third Eye Associates Limited, life planning, transition planning, and wealth management. Registered investment advisors with offices in New York City, Washington, D.C., and Red Hook, New York. ThirdEyeAssociates.com.
Yes, it's a record-setting edition of the Science Forum on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551. Record-setting pace here, and we keep answering those questions. Let's go to Bill in Greenville. Bill.
Yes, good evening. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I'd like to know, in these gentlemen's opinion, what is the most complex device or system yet devised by mankind? In other words, would it be an electrical grid for a country this size? Would it be the complexity of a spacecraft or an aircraft? You know, what would somebody from the outside looking in say about the people of the Earth as far as their degree of advancement or technology?
Okay, that's a good kind of a, that's going to slow us down a bit. All right, so go ahead, fellas.
Okay. I have to get off because I'm driving a school bus, so we'll just sit back and listen.
That's pretty complex.
Yeah, that's a complicated
one.
I
would say it'd be the Internet.
The Internet?
Yeah. I was once asked at the party what the most important thing that happened in my life, and I said the Internet.
But is that the most complex?
Yeah, you're complex, yeah. And a woman across the table, "Don't you have any children?" she said.
Okay, well, that's a great point. But I think we're talking about, an artificial construct here, right? I think that was what Bill's question was all about. Anybody else want to weigh in?
It's terrible because the only thing I know a wonderful joke where it's a thermos bottle.
Okay.
Right?
Do we have time or will it slow us down?
It's very fast.
All right, go ahead.
Effectively, the thermos bottle is the most complex thing ever invented by man because if you put hot things in it, they stay hot. And if you put cold things in it, they stay cold. And the question is, how do it know? How do it know?
How do it know? Mm. How do it know?
There you go. No, I believe the Internet is probably close to close.
That's not a physical thing, though, is it?
The Internet?
Yeah.
Of course it is. It's not just virtual.
Well, that's the infrastructure, but the Internet is a...
Well, it's the infrastructure that produces the Internet. Without that, there is no Internet.
And every big computer in the world is part of it.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And because they don't pay for it, and nobody owns it.
Yeah. Because if you were thinking, 30 years ago, you're going to design a system like you have today, nobody would let you do it because it's so complex and so expensive. Mm. As far as a single thing,
yeah,
I think the space shuttle comes up as a...
More so than the toaster, which is what I was thinking of.
Yeah, toaster. Well, probably at one time.
How about an atomic bomb?
That's three things stuck together.
Yeah.
Which kind? Fusion or fission?
Fission.
So fission bomb. But fusion would be more complicated, right?
No.
Probably not the same. You squeeze two things together, you get fusion. You take them apart, you get fission. So that's pretty simple. No, if it's something that's really complicated, really, really complicated, because I guess complicated means has the most parts, right? Yeah.
Well, we're down to a crawl now. So much for the record. Let's go back to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. Patrick, you're on.
Hey, I'm in Warwick, New York, and I'd like for these fellas, if they would, to explain the difference between a solar thermal panel, which is roughly 70% efficient, and a solar electric panel, which is more along the lines of 15% efficient.
Okay. Oh, this is going to slow us down completely. Yeah. Go for it, Jim.
Wow, everybody's deferring to me.
It's an easy one.
Okay. The photovoltaic panel, converting sunlight directly into electricity. And yes, that's common commercial ones are about 15%. With the solar thermal, one of the things which limits the solar panels is that only about 50% of the sunlight is theoretically
even less than that.
Yeah, is available.
Right. It's mostly the blue light is the only thing that really affects a solar panel.
Yeah.
So all the other colors are lost.
Well,
to a good extent.
Well, that's not.
It's the energy.
We can talk about band gaps and stuff. But anyway, in solar thermal, you're collecting heat, and you can gather up essentially all of this, virtually all of the solar energy. Mm. So the efficiency then is how well your collector is insulated. Now, basically, though, you're turning it into a lower grade of energy. If you kind of think of electricity as extremely high-grade energy.
Why? Because it's more useful?
Because it's more useful. You can do all sorts of useful things with it. If you're heating water to, let's say, 80 degrees C, which is what the solar panel will do times.
135 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, 135 Fahrenheit. There's not, in terms of useful work, there's not a lot you can do with that other than take a shower.
Everybody showers every day.
True
that's,
enough.
That's right.
Most people.
But that and that's very efficient use of that low-grade energy. So it's a highly efficient way to capture low-grade energy.
Patrick, thanks a lot for the call. What is the max efficiency they have attained with photovoltaic cells?
I've seen them at 20%. That's about it.
Still pretty low.
Well, for silicon, the ones that are used for on satellites, gallium arsenide ones, can be near 40, I think.
I
think 30.
30? Is there a theoretical max?
That's a theoretical max.
30 is the theoretical max?
I don't know if it's an absolute max, but that's as high as they go.
Okay. Let's go over to Josh in Rensselaer. Josh, you're on.
Hi. I had a question about the new book by Stephen Hawking and the Higgs boson. I was wondering if his theory that tinkering with the Higgs boson could actually bring the destruction of the universe.
Oh, I did see that. Anybody else see that? He's getting cranky in his old age, isn't he?
Yeah,
he is. I think he's a crackpot at this point. But
Ivor, what do you think?
I didn't quite hear the question.
Okay, so Stephen Hawking has a new book, and he says tinkering with the so-called God particle, the Higgs boson, could at some point obliterate the universe.
That I don't believe.
I hope you're right.
Yeah.
Trust in Ivor, Josh. Trust in Ivor.
I do.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551. John in Clifton Park. John, you're on.
Hi. My wife and I recently purchased a battery-operated toy for our five-year-old.
Okay.
What it is, it's like a wooden map of the country. So when you pull up New York, it will say the capital of New York is Albany.
All right.
So what's happened recently, which I've run this by a couple of electricians and nobody has a rational answer, when we flip on a light switch in the house, a 110 light switch, it probably happens about 30% of the time it will activate that battery-operated toy. So we'll be watching television at 11 o'clock on a Friday night. We'll go to flip a switch off, and all of a sudden you hear the capital of Iowa is Des Moines. The most rational answer one of my patients could come up with at work was that the toy must be haunted. So I don't know if you guys have any input.
Is this indicative of a real electrical problem in the house panel?
I don't think so. I mean, they are three-way switches that are kind of on the fritz, which occurs over the years, but they're still operational. It's just, and even, you know, someone at work said, well, it may be when it's being activated when you're moving. But one night, about two Fridays ago, at 11 o'clock at night, I stood by this switch and I went on and off about 10 times, and every time it activated the toy.
Yeah. How does the little puzzle thing know when you've removed the state?
Well, you physically remove.
Is it a magnet?
Yeah, is it?
Yeah, it's probably a magnet or maybe a micro loaded spring. But when you lift the state out of the map, it will then tell you that capital.
Okay, well, if it's a magnet, and then it's working by a change in the field, when you flip a switch and there's a little arc sometimes, you're putting out a pretty good radio pulse.
Ah, okay.
I've got two questions for you. Yeah. The first is, when you have your radio on, especially on AM, and you flick the switch, do you get a sound coming from the switch? That would be my first question.
Have you tried that, John?
No, I haven't.
Try it on AM radio. See if you get a click when you put on the switch, because that'll tell you whether it's arcing. And the second thing, does it make a difference how humid it is? Because the humidity can also cause this to happen.
It's hard to tell because we've only noticed this now over the past 3 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the humidity is starting to shift, but I'll keep an eye on that as well.
Yeah.
But that makes sense if it is... if it's got some type of a magnetic field.
And Ed's suggestion of testing that with the AM radio is a really good one, because you'll hear it snap.
So when it arcs, it's a very wide range. It's like a spark gap.
Yep.
Yes.
Transmitter. Okay, very good. John, hey, that's the best call of the day so far. Do us a favor, call us back with the answer.
With you. And for now, well, it's safe to say it's not haunted then, which puts us at ease.
Well, if it only happens to New York, it might be haunted.
Yeah. Exactly.
Does it come up the same state capital every time?
No. It's operating perfectly, but just not you know, we're not controlling it. So no, it's right on with the capital. So at the very least, it's an intelligent ghost.
All right, fair enough.
Great
call.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, John. We appreciate it. Over to Patrick and Troy. Patrick.
Yes, hi there. I just wanted to add another vote in favor of wearing reading glasses while driving.
Well, I'll be darned.
It works for me. I'm standing on the street right now. There's a stop sign just a little over a block away. Without any glasses on, I can see what appears to be just kind of a red blotch. If I put my readers on, I can see STOP. I also fortunately found recently sunglasses that are also readers, and that helps immensely. That makes it so that I no longer have to wear reading glasses with sunglasses, plain old sunglasses, over the reading glasses as I drive, which is a bit much.
Well, you know, all that the glasses have to do is focus the image on the back of your eye.
Of course.
And it's got to go through a lens that's on your eye.
Right.
So depending on what the lens on your eye is doing and what the lens on the reading glasses is like, it'll focus or it won't focus.
It's just optics, right?
It's just optics. Now, most reading glasses are concave glasses.
Huh?
They're concave. They have a concave surface on both sides.
Sure.
And I hope that yours do, because if they don't, then they'd be better for farsighted, and that would work.
Uh-huh.
So do they help you when you read things close up?
Well, no, because now I'm to the point I'm old enough that I need like a 3-diopter pair of glasses to read close up.
Wow.
So I guess I'm on my way to...
not driving.
Well, now I understand why old people tend to get into a lot of fender benders. But it works for me. What can I say?
Okay. If it works for you, go to town. Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call, Patrick. Let's go over to Gail in Greenville. Gail.
Hi. I have a sort of an unusual problem, I guess. My water softener went cuckoo here a while since had it replaced. But the float on the brine tank got stuck, so as a result, it poured brine all over the cellar at the area where it was.
Oh, boy.
And it solidified because I didn't know when it happened. I went down and I found it.
Yeah.
And I chipped it up because it was solid, and I chipped up as much of it as I could get up, but it's still there, and for some reason it stays damp. Now, does that, I mean, is it a deliquescent substance?
All right, hang on just a sec. Gail, while the scientists are answering, could you turn your radio down? I'm hearing sort of a delayed effect.
I've got you on speaker. Does that make a difference?
Yes, it does.
Hold on, I'll get you.
Okay, is that better?
Splendid. All right, now, I think we have the gist of your question. What do you think, gentlemen?
How can I get rid of it?
That's all. Yes, and you're absolutely right. Salt is deliquescent. Mm-hmm. If you look at us, we go to the beach for vacation at Cape Cod, and yes, indeed, the salt shaker always has
water. Is it deliquescent or hygroscopic? Just a question.
No, deliquescent is when it actually makes a puddle of water. Okay. Hygroscopic, it just takes up the water.
Okay.
So sodium chloride is indeed deliquescent. So what to clean it up, you should just use water.
Just water, that'll do it?
Hot water is even better than cold water.
Well, actually, with salt, The difference in solubility is not that great.
Okay.
Hot and cold. So it really doesn't make too much difference.
Okay, now, because I thought maybe I needed something like vinegar?
No, not with salt. Just good old water will do. Yep.
All righty.
That's why it works in the water softener.
Yeah.
Because they add water and it dissolves the salt.
Yeah.
I'll be darned. I didn't think that far ahead, I guess.
Well, thanks, Gail.
Okay, thanks very much.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. It's Vox Pop. It's the science forum. We've been moving, for the most part, at breakneck speed. Let's go to James in Monroe. James.
Yes, hi. I was listening to a program the other day, and they were talking about the scientists that discovered that the body is full of small microorganisms that they didn't even know existed. And I was wondering, since we're one big gigantic mess of different organisms, each person is, and we all work together for the whole to keep ourselves going. Could they affect our emotional or physical being?
Well, they certainly affect your physical health in that the benign or beneficial microbes in your skin, for example, tend to crowd out the ones which could cause harm. Mm. And I think it's the same thing with the gut microbes. And you need a good mix of gut microbes to properly digest a number of foods and maintain health.
You have actually more bacteria in your gut than you have cells in the body.
Yeah.
Wow. So clearly they are very important for you.
Or people in the United States, for that matter.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I guess it could affect, if it affected your physical health, that could affect your emotional health.
Sure.
Certainly.
And they also produce byproducts which can affect you, hormones and such.
Oh, there you
go.
All
that can happen.
If you take an antibiotic cure, you kill bacteria in your stomach, and normally that affects your health.
James, is that good for you?
Yes, yes, yes. I was wondering too, just one quick one is, we conduct electricity, so we'll have a magnetic force of our own. Would these microbes have their own electricity and magnetic force that interact with ours?
The bacteria will have an electrical charge inside, but they don't really deal with electricity as such.
Okay. Great question. James, thank you very much. Let's go over to Bonnie and Sharon. Bonnie, you're on.
Hi. This is a short question regarding the microbiome. Same subject, but a little further along.
Okay.
How far are we in terms of our investigative scientific studies to get to the point where we will start to treat the microbiome as we currently do blood in terms of diagnosis of various disease states?
Well,
how far has that gotten, and who's doing the research on it?
I can't tell you who's doing the research, but you probably heard recently of the several million dollar prize for somebody who can come up with a scanner that would determine how a person is and what their level of health is. A lot of that is being done with respect to smells, and those smells are coming from the microbes. So in that respect, there is there is something going on there, but being a geologist, I can't go much further than that.
Was that being done in this country or over in England?
That's being done all over the world. It's the prize. Okay. The prize is a global prize.
That part I remembered reading. Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks. Jim, you want to have any?
Yeah, I think that that's a very perceptive question in that, reading Science magazine, that they're increasing number of papers on the biome that's in us, mm-hmm. and how it differs from person to person, and how to manipulate that, I think, is just the next step.
So it's a new frontier an expanding frontier in science. We're going to take a break here. It is the Science Forum. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Back. The lightning round approaches.
Support comes from Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokanCenter.org. The Center for Extended Care on University Drive in Amherst, a family-owned and operated nursing center offering rehab, long-term care, and Alzheimer's specialty care. CECAA.com. Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, featuring crocus, daffodils, tulips, allium, and more for fall planting. WardsNursery.com. And the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, celebrating 30 years of educating children and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning. WaldorfSaratoga.org.
Hey, guess what? The Fun Drive starts on Monday, October 6th. Monday at 6 a.m., October 6th, we'll be with you. Alan will be in the driver's seat, and we hope you join us for the Fun Drive. There is a way that you can make this Fun Drive a little bit shorter. Maybe you want to go back to regular programming earlier. Well, go to WAMC.org, WAMC.org. Click on the lockbox. Make your pledge now. Everything we raise between now and the start of the drive counts on day one. We have a goal of hitting 300,000 by October 6th. We're about 173, 174 right now. That means very good time to kick it in now. 1-800-348-2551 is our phone number. And back we go to the phones. Maeve and Saugerties. Maeve.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
The reason why I called in is because I had a puzzle that did the same thing.
Okay.
Except every time I turned on the light, it would play Ode to Joy.
Huh. And what sort of a toy was this?
The puzzle, like the previous caller who had a puzzle with pieces, when you pulled out, it would make noise.
Yeah.
And so it was very nice to hear that happened to somebody else and not just me.
Was the puzzle supposed to play Ode to Joy?
It was.
Okay, good. Because if it was one of those States puzzles and it played Beethoven, you got issues. So same deal. You turn the light switch on and it would happen? Okay. Let's turn on Ed's mic, Zach, the engineer. Hang on just a sec.
Okay.
There's Ed. Ed wanted to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say, it sounds like a Clockwork Orange toy. I don't particularly like the idea. But yeah.
I did have a question.
Go.
So I bought Snap Circuits to use with my children. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. It's an electronics toy.
Right.
And I was wondering if you guys had any suggestions on how to use it to help a child learn the concepts.
Okay.
But I found myself, other than just putting it together, I wasn't really sure what to do.
All right.
You mean in terms of what the actual resistors and capacitors and transistors do? Snap toys, each block has a transistor or a resistor or something else, and they snap together to make radios and things like that. So there's a lot of things on the web as to how they can be put together. But as far as understanding what the various components are, that's a bit trickier because they're all sort of locked into these things.
Are these new? I remember the old 65-in-1 kits where they had the spring loaded in the wires.
Right,
what is this?
This is the same thing except that they're in plastic
like
containers. And you just snap it together.
Electronic Lego?
Yeah.
Lego?
Yeah, it's an electronic Lego.
Oh, I got to get that.
Yeah.
That sounds
like fun. It's really cool.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, and you're given a little diagram, and you have to put it together to make something work. But as far as the actual components, that's a bit trickier to explain because they're locked together. You can't change one component with the other and get the same thing to happen. So it's limited in that respect.
Okay. And do you have a recommendation of a website that has good information on using them?
Well, I don't per se, but I will take it up. I'll take it up for
homework. All right, and Ed will be back, and he'll answer your question. In the meantime, you will have found the answer yourself on the internet, but still, he'll have an answer for you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mae. Appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. The Science Forum, you know. Rick in Hudson. Rick.
Oh, good afternoon. Well, went shopping for some good old-fashioned light bulbs the other day and can no longer buy the 100-watt or the 75-watt, and I guess the 60s and the 25s are going to be on the hit list.
That's right.
And went into the local box store with a dizzying array of fluorescent, the CFLs, compact fluorescent lights. And I understand there's basically two different kinds. There's cold cathode and hot cathode fluorescent lights. Can you explain the difference between the two?
I have never heard of that, so I can't.
Yeah, neither have I.
Well, you stumped the band. You stumped the band, Rick.
Oh, boy.
The lights I want to try are the LED light bulbs.
Bought lots of those.
They're expensive, though, aren't they?
Not anymore.
How much are they? Well, let's not talk about it. Really?
$8 a bulb, yeah.
Okay. And how long would they last ordinarily?
Well, the problem with LEDs, I'm sorry to take your
we,
take your
we
question.
Don't have you an answer to your question, Rick. You can either hang up or hang on and listen.
Well, I haven't gotten as far as the LEDs yet because they're still way too expensive.
That's what I thought too, Rick.
No, they're going down quickly.
I'm with you.
Yeah, and I think they'll go down even more
sure.
the next year or so.
But the way the LEDs work, they're actually produce quite a bit of heat.
Yeah.
And heat is the thing that kills LEDs faster than anything else.
Yeah.
The heat is removed from the system through the bulb, the metal part of the bulb on the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And it has to have a good airflow. And if it doesn't have airflow, then it overheats, and that burns out the electronics that run the LED.
So what's the...
If you have an LED and it's not in an enclosed structure, I've had them burn out in 2 months if they're in something that's enclosed. But if they're able to get the heat out, then they're supposed to last for 25 years.
What about RF interference?
Shouldn't be.
No?
They're just diodes. There's no reason for that.
Well, we've had LED Christmas lights for several years now, and they don't seem to burn out. They're very...
That's because they're small, and as a result, the heat can get out very, very easily.
Okay.
Yep.
And they're only used at Christmas time.
Yeah. Well,
so they can last for a very long time.
The season lasts a long time in my house. Let me tell you, it's very expensive. Chris in Holyoke. Chris, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question has to do with black holes.
Okay.
My understanding is that as a black hole attracts more mass, it then can attract even more mass. So my question has to do with if this is the pattern of a black hole, and there are an infinite probably number of black holes, is it possible that the whole universe would be basically a black hole?
No. In principle, if you have a black hole, it will attract other material, and eventually maybe the whole universe would be one black hole, but we are far away from that.
Okay.
And so black hole, really, if you have a star or a big thing, the gravity act on it, and the more it contract, the faster it contract. So there have been a suggestion that you should use black hole to collect your garbage, but other than that, I don't know any use for them.
I like that. Hey, Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Now, current wisdom says there is a black hole at the center of every galaxy. So is that really the engine that fires a galaxy?
No. I don't know, but that's what people say.
Well, basically, a black hole is any star that collapses that's more than about 24 times the mass of the sun. And in the center of the galaxy, there's lots of stars, and there's going to be stars that are larger than 24 times the mass of the sun. So there's going to be a black hole pretty well everywhere.
Okay.
And that's where they come from. Now, whether it's the chicken or the egg that comes first, that's a whole other question.
All right. Let's go to Emma in Pittsfield. No, Irma. I'm sorry. Irma in Pittsfield. You're on.
I have a TV in my bedroom that goes on by itself.
Oh, boy.
No matter what time of day, it could be walking through the house by the bedroom, all of a sudden you look and the TV's on.
Is it a Hitachi? We had a Hitachi that used to go on by itself.
No. It's a Vizio.
Oh, okay. It's a Vizio. It's an LED? LCD?
LED. It's a Vizio, yeah.
Now we're getting to the bottom of this. Gentlemen.
Yeah, you've got a bad switch.
That's that what
all
it is?
That's all it is. You've got a switch which is making contact whenever it feels like it. It might be close enough that just, again, a change of humidity in the room can make it start.
How about a neighbor has the same clicker?
It could be that, too. Yeah, although...
The first time it happened, I thought I had spirits in there.
Could be. What shows are the spirits like, Irma?
I don't know, but I heard that somebody talking. I said, listen to the bedroom talking, and I looked, the TV was on.
Wow.
Very cool.
Actually, it might be an interesting experiment to put a little piece of black tape over the remote control sensor.
Oh, that's a brilliant idea.
And, and see if that stops it.
So what do you think, Irma? Okay. You know what Jim's talking about? So you have that little opening, that little
dot.
Usually a dot on the front of your TV that receives the signal from your remote control.
Oh, yeah, where the light is.
Yeah, and so Jim suggests maybe put a little piece of tape over that and see if this problem goes away.
There are different types of remotes, though. There are remotes that work on light, usually infrared, and they have to be line of sight. But there are other types of remotes that work on radio frequencies.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it is possible that somebody in the room next door might be firing theirs up and firing yours at the same time.
It's never happened in the middle of the night, though. Only during the day or
and
early evening.
That may suggest that somebody next door is on the same frequency that you are.
Oh, okay.
Very interesting.
All right, I'll check it.
And call us back next month, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thanks a lot. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go over to Carl in Palatine. Carl, you're on.
Hello, yes. Thank you very much for the extraordinary call receptor, Dina, who does such intelligent inquiries and scheduling.
She's very
my
good,
question,
yes.
My question.
Okay.
Brazil, the destruction of the Amazon forest. Further, in Java, Indonesia, how in the world do we possibly help oxygen creation in the future?
Okay.
Given what's going on economically, first in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s with Japan, and now with China, how do we stop all of the environmental stuff that a guy like Joe Donahue talks about.
All right. Let's answer that. Okay. We get it, Carl. Go. Paddle. It's all yours.
Well, I can tell you as a geologist that 10,000 years ago...
All right. You got your radio on too loud, Carl. You can listen off on the... Okay. So go ahead.
Well, 10,000 years ago, there was a huge ice sheet over much of North America, and a lot of trees were gone, and we survived it. So, yes, we need trees. How many trees we need, that's a whole other story. I can't give you that
number. There were a lot less
number.
People 10,000 years ago.
That's true. But people use oxygen, but not that much oxygen.
Yeah,
they use it more for machinery than for anything else, I think.
Yeah, and isn't most of it created in the oceans, oceanic plankton?
Yeah, not by the trees.
Well, a great question, Carl.
But,
we appreciate it.
Not that we're advocating destruction of the rainforest.
No, absolutely.
But as far as the oxygen goes, that's...
It's not the problem.
That's
okay.
Yeah, there are lots of problems, but not that one.
Terrific. Let's go over to Marcel in Windsor, Mass. Marcel, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question has to deal with your keyless remote on your automobile. I had my son told me once that if you hold the remote next to your head, that it would actually work better. And I thought that was a lot of baloney, so I tried it, and it seemed to work. I've said maybe it's just because I had it elevated. I had a higher, more direct line of sight, but I held it over my head. It didn't work. Held it out to the side, forward, whatever. It didn't work. Held it next to my head, and the car unlocked.
Wow.
Is there any reason for that? Is your head amplifying the signal kind of like a sound box on a guitar? Or
Do you know how the key fob works?
I assume it's a small transmitter that just transmits the signal to the modulated...
Right.
For the car,
it actually sends an electrical pulse over to it, which gives it enough power to send an electrical pulse back to you. It's a very, very small electrical pulse. So your key fob is sending a signal over to it, and that thing is reflecting that signal effectively back to you to tell you that it's working. And again, I think the only thing that can happen is if it's next to you, you may be acting as an antenna, which could in some way be grounding it to the car better than the signal itself. But again, I can try it at home, see what I get. But
you're always holding it, so wouldn't you have the same effect all the time?
That's true.
That's true, but it only seems to work when you hold it next to your head. Now, like I said, unless maybe the shape of your skull works like a sound box on a guitar to amplify the signal, or I'm not sure. But
holding it more directly then, towards your car, so you're pointing it more better?
Well, I tried pointing it directly at the car, arm's length, holding it arm's length to the side, holding it arm length over, over my head. Didn't make any difference, but when I held it next to my head, then the car would unlock.
Amazing. So,
just that edge of the range of the...
Wow. You're not wearing any sort of tinfoil hat, right? That would amplify
not that.
The... Okay, all right. Well, what do you think, guys? Anything? All right, I think I got nothing, Marcel.
I think we got a winner here.
You win again.
I stumped the panel.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Wow.
All right, we're going to go to J.D. in Springfield. J.D., you're on.
Hi, I had a question about the wind turbine thing. Is that the only way that wind can be used, is by those propellers way up there? Isn't there another shape or design that would be less hazardous for the atmosphere and the view and birds and all that if it was a different shape? And we don't seem to hear about anything other than the blades up in the air. Is there any research that anybody knows about that's being done with a different shape that's more efficient and less hazardous?
There are lots of different shapes, but the main problem with wind turbines is that they have to be high enough in the air that they don't get turbulence from the ground.
Yeah.
And so no matter what you do, no matter what shape you make, it's got to be high enough up, it's going to be obvious. Generally speaking, the way you test, for example, for a wind turbine is you put a kite up in the air, put a bunch of little telltales on the string, little pieces of string on it, and see when they start pointing all in the same direction rather than going all over the place. And usually you have to be 30 to 40 feet above the anything that's in the area. And so if there are trees in the area, you've got to be 40 feet above the trees before you get a turbine that works well. So even though you can make different shapes, like there are the shapes that are horizontal wings instead of vertical ones, you still have the same problem. They have to be way up there to make it worthwhile.
All right, J.D., thanks a lot. Go ahead.
The Los Alamos had promoted a wind turbine which was horizontal some years ago.
Ah.
And they were very high on that, but I had never seen that anybody have installed it.
I saw one actually in the Magdalen Islands that got tipped over because the wind blew it over.
Ah,
okay. They had the problem.
All right, we only have a minute or so left here. Let's go to John from Albany. John, you get the last call today.
This is information, so maybe it doesn't count towards your record. But I used to be a research instructor in ophthalmology, and the lens inside the eye has a muscle around it, and it constricts it so that it actually can adjust the focus. It's called accommodation.
Right.
When you're newborn, that accommodation allows you to focus right up to about 5 centimeters in front of your face. But by the time you're 40 or 50, you can't get arms long enough to be able to focus. So at some point, when your accommodation is really, really poor as you're older, the reading glasses actually help to boost that accommodation function. And so it may be true that then you can then focus at things at a distance with the assistance of some reading glass.
That makes sense.
That's my info.
Well, John, we're going to count that toward the record, and I guess we've set a record here. Zach, how many calls did we take today? Do you have any idea? What's the answer? I can't hear you. You're on the other side of the glass. He doesn't know. All right, well, we can't call it an official record. Ivor Gaber, thank you very much for being here. Jim, thank you for being here. Ed, thank you for being here.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you all for listening. Gosh, what a fun time. Remember, WAMC.org is the website. If you want to make a pledge now at the lockbox, we would love to hear from you. Everything counts. The first day, the first minute of the fund drive, which, by the way, starts on October 6th. So let's get those pledges in now. We'll shorten that drive right up. Support comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. And Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities, open 7 days a week, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. All right, that's it for the program. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for calling. And there were a lot of calls today. Thanks to Zach Malloy for not counting the number of calls, but for controlling the engineering aspect of this program. Thanks to Dina Salzman, who took the calls. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's a Food Friday. Stay tuned now for a news update.